RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Matt Robson has appeared on RCR, in fact, most recently in our Fourth Estate program late last week. He's an Auckland barrister, former Minister of Disarmament and Arms Control and Associate Foreign Minister under Helen Clark. He was in coalition in the Alliance Party. He's also an advocate for global peace and justice. Who isn't? He's a regular speaker at disarmament and anti-nuclear conferences around the world and has written opinion pieces on various issues related to international relations and nuclear disarmament. We thought we'd get Matt on because there are some big issues in our neck of the woods. There's AUKUS, New Caledonia, and in the big picture, possible war in Europe. And that comes after comments, frightening comments from a European politician. We'll be talking about that a bit later on in the chat. Matt, thanks for coming back on RCR.
That's a pleasure.
Okay, AUKUS, and of course, China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi visited the country, highest level Chinese visit in over 7 years, and this occurs amid China's advocacy for its One China policy and New Zealand's efforts to broaden trade relationships. Foreign Minister Winston Peters highlighted the complexity and importance of New Zealand's relationship with China, and just before I ask you about this, Matt. Jason Young from Victoria University has noted the significance of China as a global power and the complexity due to differing interests and values between the two countries, one being that they are our major trading partner.
What would you like me to start with?
Well, let's start with the visit from the Chinese Foreign Minister, Wang Yi. How significant is that? That's very high level, isn't it?
It's very high level. He's the second most important political figure in China. And from the material that I've read, he's no pushover. He's got his own independent political history, not just handpicked by the president, and very influential in the area that he was in. So his presence is not just nominally number two. It's a very influential figure. And I believe it's a chance to reset the dangerous path that we were on.
Dangerous in what way?
In becoming an enemy of China. I'll just quickly say here, for all my experience, to be to have friendly relations, or perhaps a better thing is normal relations, as you do with countries all around the world, it does not mean that you pull off your ability, take away, to be critical of anything that may happen inside that country that affects you, that you've got a right to comment on. Nor do they have to pull back on any criticisms they may have of this country. And if we're honest about it, instead of being a paragon of virtue in the world, there's a lot that you could criticize New Zealand on in many, many areas. However, back to this. So good relations with China, which means normal relations and not seeing it through the lens of the United States or Great Britain, is so important for New Zealand, or for that matter, seeing it through the lens of any particular Australian government. And we're, as other commentators, not just me, but people I've clashed swords with inside New Zealand, Don Brash, former leader of ACT, Helen Clark, the Labour Party, both of them I've had my differences with, which you expect in a democracy. But they too have said, hey, caution here, let's look at the relationship with China. Let's not just follow other people's raving sheet, or whatever, I can't think of the right word for it, echo chamber against China. And I think it was Bob Carr, the former Australian foreign minister, who's also called for thinking about having a peaceful, normal trading relationship with China and not being part of AUKUS. I think it was him who said, you know, there's one thing worse than being an enemy of the United States, that's being an ally.
Yeah.
It's a very important visit. And clearly also the Chinese, look, one other thing, we're not that realistic. If you go out in the world, who really cares about New Zealand? I mean, we like to think we're a punch of, when I was a minister, I was always told we're punching above our weight, which I thought more like we were punch drunk. Punch above our weight.
Okay.
Everybody's sort of looking, what is New Zealand? No. A whole lot of countries don't even know where we are. And the last thing that the Chinese power elite are doing is sitting down and thinking, right, what's happening in New Zealand? What are we doing? So we should be grateful that a very, very large and important power is coming and talking to us as an equal and showing the courtesy of it.
Clearly, China perceives AUKUS, and we're in the Pillar 2, which is Security Technology Sharing Pact with Australia, the UK, and the US. Though that, I saw the description of what that involves, and there was something like quantum information processing in that, so I don't know what that is. Sounds like some futuristic thing. Unlike Pillar 1 that the Aussies are in, and that involves nuclear-powered subs, we'll never be able to afford those, obviously. China, I guess, perceives AUKUS as some kind of containment strategy against it, voicing strong opposition. I just wonder now, with everything that's happening in the world, with the proxy war, and it is in Ukraine, and we'll get to that again a bit later on, behavior of the United States, it's the obvious problem with its government led from the top, a senile, weird situation. I mean, who's the real enemy now? Seems to me that China just wants to do business, and whatever you want to do is fine. We do business. We do what we do. You do what you do. And there might be a bit of crossover, but that's essentially it. Am I being naive? Am I missing something?
Well, you're not missing anything, except perhaps a question. Why is New Zealand not sitting back and thinking the world through? I'm hopeful now that Labor got such a pasting and they no longer have Andrew Little there and Jacinda Ardern and Hipkins just singing from the NATO playbook, that we'll have a look at the world and the great power blocks. My opinion, New Zealand doesn't have to join any of the power blocks, but it needs to be able to be like a lot of countries in the world, say, hey, we're not getting drawn into your wars. We're going to think about situations and we'll make our own decisions. Thank you very much. Now, joining AUKUS is not making our own decision. One thing we need to look at, put ourselves in the Chinese shoes. So they got off their coast. They've got a RIMPAC, I think it's coming up in June, which happens every year. And at RIMPAC, they practice invading China. They practice invading North Korea. Now, North Korea, you know, lots of things you can discuss about North Korea, but once again, just because they do things that people mightn't like or don't want or think it's not sensible, doesn't mean you invade them. Otherwise, we'd have a list of countries we're starting to invade around the world. Yeah. Now, but they practice invading North Korea and China, and China knows that North Korea is the stepping stone, like Russia knew that Ukraine was the stepping stone into Russia. And I'll come to that in a moment, yes. But when China looks out, they're told aggression in the South China Sea. It's actually important to think China, South China Sea. So it's off China. So if the United States was looking at aggression or whatever the sea is, the Pacific Ocean, off California, Mexico, yes, they would be a bit worried too. Mm. So the Chinese are worried. And then they know that they actually discussed with Obama, I think way back in, must have been 2015, some type of demilitarization. Take hands off in the South China Sea. Let's not clash. Obama rejected it. And he rejected it because of the pivot to Asia. Now, the other thing I want New Zealand to think about, or I mentioned that the Labor Party might, not that I great hope that they'll do it, but they're discussing, starting at their base, why did we get dragged into such a strong position in the Five Eyes? Why did we get dragged into talking, as Hipkins did and Little did? Oh, we're really quite keen on looking at AUKUS Pillar 2. What about having a look at peace? And in terms of China and AUKUS, yes, of course they know. It's not pretending that it's not part of the strategy of the United States trying to weaken China. It's not Matt Robson making this up. That's discussed in all the leading journals. In fact, the American journals actually discuss, well, how do you weaken China? Now, China's have books of history. They know that in the 19th century, the playbook, well, that's the word I was looking at, playbook. The playbook was weaken China. All the Western European and North American, or the United States, not Canada, entered China, told it what to do, put it on its knees, had zones of interest, had parts of Shanghai which said dogs and Chinese not allowed. They don't forget it. They don't forget that Taiwan was where the Japanese also launched a lot of their attacks on China from and used it as an airbase to attack China, which is another thing we've forgotten. Matt, on his hobby horse here, I watched the D-Day celebrations, and there was, as you mentioned, President Biden. I know he has a problem with memory, but he was talking about, you know, this was winning the war. No, it didn't. The war was won on the steps of Russia, where the Wehrmacht was destroyed by the Red Army. And people say, oh, well, if the Americans and British hadn't invaded, and it took them a long time to open that front, the French would be speaking German. No, they'd be speaking Russian, because the Russians would have got there. That doesn't mean it's right, it's wrong. But what a ridiculous world where we have a ceremony like at D-Day, talk about freedom, and he used it to attack Russia on the question of the war in the Ukraine. The war in the Ukraine, not Russia's war in the Ukraine. But he calls it Russia's war in the Ukraine. Not a mention of what's happening in the Gaza. So there is another war we could have been discussed there. Back to China. China is aware of this world history, has reached out to New Zealand, and New Zealand could start to think whether it wants to be part of the playbook that's either, you know, just solid strangling China, which they're not going to do. I mean, they're not going to do it. It's on the losing side anyway. China's not going to collapse. Do we want to be part of that and the bases? And I mentioned RIMPAC, but into the RIMPAC come, Israel is sending a force to RIMPAC. The NATO, the Netherlands, Germany. What are these European countries doing back in the Pacific? Because we're going to mention Caledonia in a minute. We talk about China's aggression. Well, we need some proof. Where has China been aggressive? Which countries has it attacked? Which countries is it planning to attack? I can put it up.
I haven't seen anything, Matt, I got to say, and there's no case has been made for that. I mean, you could argue New Zealand's just as bad. Look what we did to our people in the last 3 years. That was pretty totalitarian. And there's no way, is there, that the US, that any serious military commentator, apart from nuclear weapons, which the Chinese have, then can retaliate with, that the US could ever invade China. Come on.
No, they would get a pasting. I mean, clearly, if they think Vietnam was bad, which it was for the Vietnamese, first of all, not just for the Americans, but the Vietnamese, 3 million dead. After sent, you know, but China, of course not. They don't even want to invade Cuba with 10 million people because they know there'd be fierce resistance. And, you know, so they pick their targets. I mean, Iraq was a pushover because of, you know, so many factors about in terms of invading. But Iran's not Iraq.
Russia's. And look how they hightailed it out of Afghanistan. I mean, that was disgraceful.
Well, there's another point. It couldn't even win in Afghanistan with all the might of NATO, the bombing and the things. And finally, I think that was a message to a lot of countries around the world. Hey, America's your ally. They're not necessarily going to stay with you to the, you know, last train to Yuma or whatever it was.
If we get heavy, though, by the US and the, can't believe that we're talking about NATO being in the Pacific, but those NATO nations and that side to kind of behave. How do we resist that and still maintain, you know, viability?
Well, there's a new world. Singapore does it. Vietnam's told the United States to go to hell. It's not going to break its relations with China. Indonesia has had China build a high-speed train. And is forging it ahead with its economy. And there are lots of problems with Indonesia, I'm not saying. But the Chinese have built that. Laos, one of the poorest countries in the world, has now got a high-speed train, which China has put in. The belt, what is it? The
Belt and Road.
Silk Road, the Belt and Braces Road.
Yeah, Belt and Braces.
They're putting trillions into it. Trillions. Now, they say, well, the Chinese want influence. Well, of course they want influence.
At least you get something for it, right? You get infrastructure, you get things that work. When was the last time the United States built a high-speed rail line for anyone?
Exactly. They can't even build it in their own country. And part of it is, I mean, that's another thing that's coming up. We're in a changing world. So the New Zealand politicians, I mentioned to everybody, I'm glad they're starting to think about this ridiculous thing. They haven't come anywhere yet, but they're having these fierce debates at the conferences, or fierce, but debates anyway, which they haven't been able to have under the Jacinda Hipkins years, you know, just rah, rah, rah. The Greens are also starting to think. Now, I'm not putting up those parties as the paragons of virtue, but I'm saying if parties represent you know, segments of the community, our community needs to start thinking. Now, the question you ask is, well, where do we go? That used to be put to us, oh, we weren't with America, we're finished, we're completely gone. Well, now, it's no longer called the Global South, it's called the Global Majority. Yeah. With countries, you know, repressive countries like Saudi Arabia joining, through to a range of other countries. You don't have to agree with them all, but they're joining up for economic interests, strategic interests. And it's shown by this silly peace conference, or this conference wasn't in Switzerland, that was orchestrated.
Well, how can it be a peace conference without Russia there? I mean,
well, Russia's not there, but
yeah. And they've offered a deal.
The important countries that did say, okay, we'll come along. They all made the point, Russia's not here. What's the point of this? They wouldn't sign the communique. Big, powerful economies, Brazil, okay. Saudi yeah. Arabia, others, they wouldn't sign it. And they want a solution. Yes, you want a solution to this war. Then, of course, Russia has to be there, has to be discussing. Of course, the people of the Donbass have to have a view as well. Because yeah. Why did they want to join Russia? Well, because since 2014, they were bombarded, sniped at.
And they are Russian. It seems. They speak Russian and they have Russian ancestry. We'll get on to that conflict in just a moment, which could become a broader one. I'll get your view on that. In our neck of the woods, Emmanuel Macron suspends New Caledonia constitutional amendment, which would mainly change the restrictions from a frozen electoral roll. Only those who have resided in New Caledonia before 98 can vote, to a sliding roll, still restricted, but allowing people who had resided in New Caledonia for a minimum of 10 uninterrupted years to vote. He's announced the suspension, not withdrawal of that amendment. Decision, it says here, comes amid violent unrest in the French Pacific archipelago. The Kanak people are not happy. What are your thoughts on this? Is it time? Is a big question. Is it time for the French to extract themselves from there?
Oh. Well, it's not going to go away. I mean, unless they carry out a Palestinian-style ethnic cleansing for, you know, going on since 1948. And where are they going to push these people to? I'm not suggesting they try it, but I'm saying if that was in their mind, they're not going to get rid of them. The Kanaki people are going to stay there. And also, such a long way from the North Atlantic, such a long way from France. And they've had Algeria, they've had Vietnam, to think they would learn. But France gets a pretty free pass, despite having, you know, bombed our harbour. They're French. They're apparently, it's not aggression in the Pacific. It's not a danger to have this huge military presence, which they have in, I mean, that's what the French Polynesia is. It's a great military base. As well as bringing in all these immigrants and the strategy to bring in people so that you outnumber the native population. But the native population have more children, which is one of the consequences of poverty. When you're poor, you have more children.
The French, not much else to do, eh?
Well, it's your future, you know, it's looking after yourself. But no, it's a questioning. I was in France when this happened. Had to go for a family matter. It wasn't a holiday, but unfortunately. And I saw the reaction and the confusion of French people. There were some demonstrations in France against it. There was support for the Kanaki. And it wasn't all Barra France. And French people were worried because the headlines were big in France, big right across the front pages. Riots, people killed, or a couple of police officers killed, or whatever, and the danger and neighborhoods burnt down. But no, they need a solution. And the solutions face colonial countries all around the world. The history is coming home, and you can either have a situation that's worked out, like hopefully they do. The United States got rid of its native population, but you know, they have to work something out. We have to work something out here in New Zealand in terms of the colonial history. We live together. How do we do it? You've got a choice. The French in Algeria, you know, they had a lot of people living there, but in the end, they had to extract them all. Maybe if they'd have been more sensible, there would have been a solution much earlier. South Africa is another example of a country that is working on, you know, big immigrant population, but those who were born there. So you've got a couple of choices, and the French are now facing that choice. Does it try and work out a cooperative genuine democratic solution, or does it retreat to military force? Military force is going to eventually wind up in a
not so good. How should we be handling it? I mean, we're in the neighbourhood. What should New Zealand's stance be? Because if we're going to be railing against colonialism, we'll have questions asked about ourselves. I know
exactly.
That.
Exactly. So we can't be hypocrites. And exactly. I don't blame the French for saying, "Hey, stop pointing fingers at us." What are you? You're also an immigrant population, native population, indigenous population. Well, what we should be doing is calling for the truth, and saying that we don't support suppression, repression, that we're, in fact, just back to not being in AUKUS, we might be listened to more if we weren't seen, starting to be seen more and more like a puppet of Washington.
Yeah.
If we weren't seen to be, you know, statements by the foreign minister that we're back with America, you know, when he went to visit with Blinken and putting all our eggs in the basket, basically what he's saying. I know there's this positive thing in terms of Luxon talking to the Chinese, but the bigger megaphone is saying, hey, we're signing up with AUKUS, we're signing up with the Americans, we're going that route, we're signing up, getting deeper with NATO. So we should pull, that will help us to be listened to on the question of what's happening in Caledonia, but the greater French Polynesian issue.
And we're in that Five Eyes Club, and I don't know about that, because that commits us to do things we might not want to do, right?
Yeah, well, Five Eyes, when I was in government, I mean, Jim Anderson said to me, hey, we get nothing useful from these people. That's what he told me. He was on that committee.
Okay.
Don't tell us anything you can't read somewhere.
Okay.
So that is also, that's an irritation to people around the world. They can see, you know, here's five Anglo-speaking countries, all white countries. And that's a factor, you know, sort of like they look at it and say, that's the old slave-holding elite, really. And they surveil the world. You know, there's the Five Eyes, there's the extended Nine Eyes, which is a key European countries. There's extended 16 Eyes, most of the European Union's on our side. They don't like Hungary or Serbia or countries like that. But Israel has got a part in the extended network as well. When the global South, now called the global majority, look at it, whichever side of the fence they come down, whatever they look at it and think, hey, this is stacked against us, these people. So, yeah, it needs to be thought about as well.
Okay, and again, not that much reporting of the problems in New Caledonia in our local media. This is a reoccurring theme, as if we wouldn't be interested. I mean, it's our freaking neighbour, you know?
Yeah, I was surprised that we should have had journalists set up there probing, getting questioned, and the Parliament should be demanding it and looking at it, because it's waiting there like a time bomb, and you know, we need to know. And you want to ask about Ukraine?
Yeah, I do. Recent comments, by President Alexander Vucic, Serbia's president. And I can't believe I'm reading this. The train has left the station. No one can stop it. Europe will be at war with Russia, Serbia's president Vucic says, in 3 to 4 months. Wow.
Wow. Yeah, it's big. And as a country, the only thing that makes us feel good is that we can watch the Warriors and worry whether the All Blacks have got the right coach and think we can hide. But we can't. I was just looking on my bookshelf. There's a book called, you might have read it, Christopher Clark, an Australian historian, wrote Sleepwalking to War. A very influential book. And his thesis is that in the First World War, that as these alliances build, people didn't even know they were getting caught up in the big powers stumbling towards killing each other, and then First World War, mass industrial-style slaughter, first time ever. And it seems to some commentators, not just Matt Robson, that there's a similar sort of stumbling, or maybe even starting to run to war. And if, you know, the rockets, if this madness of the French and British saying, hey, fire them into Russia, give it to Russia. It's not going to cripple Russia. They're just going to fire back. Then they're going to make the choice. Do they hit? Because if they hit Russia, Russia says, well, okay, we'll hit your reserves in Poland, Germany. Maybe, I don't know whether they will do that. But what are they going to do? So if they let, and it's the last throw of the dice. Zelensky's under pressure. He's not even elected at the moment.
No, that's it. Can you believe that? Fighting for democracy in a country where there is essentially no democracy.
No, and
it makes no sense.
The warnings are coming, not from the Putin puppets, it's to kill debate. I mean, that's if you go to the what we talk about, cancel culture in New Zealand. I know it's a big thing on the station. The lack of freedom of speech. So you shut somebody up like Jeffrey Sachs or Mearsheimer or many others who are saying, hey, this is nuts to try and take over the Black Sea and push Georgia into a war with Russia and keep going in the Ukraine and running out the playbook that's been there for anyone to read ever since George Kennan wrote that the United States has to stay the biggest power. Then you get the doctrines in the 1990s saying, hey, we've got to keep Russia weak. And the Russians know the history of China, don't they? We think nobody knows any history. Well, maybe we don't know it here. And the Russians know that's what's the playbook on China in the 19th century. Split them up, make them weak. That's the playbook on Russia, is make it weak, dominate, big with resources. And so back to the question of war, yes, just no discussion in our parliament on the complexities, on research. I can't know any member of parliament who's starting to say, take this very seriously.
None that I've seen, yeah.
No, and so a war, the president of Serbia, well, I hope he's wrong. And other commentators who are saying, hey, there's going to be a war.
Well, Viktor Orban is warning of it as well. And I think you've got Rutte, the former Dutch prime minister, who's
Rutte,
hoping to become the NATO secretary general, saying that Russia should be broken up into 200 separate states and territories. So they've already, they're already thinking about the after bit. Come on.
Yeah. And that's been put up for a very long time, that's what should happen to Russia. And that's not even discussed here, that is a serious proposition. I didn't know Rutte had said that, but sounds like he would.
No, well, I was just reading it before. The other thing, of course, is we are supporting the, well, if you want to call it the Ukrainian side, the collective West in that effort. We've given money to them, and our foreign minister has been quoted as saying that Russia is the aggressor and talking about illegal invasions. Well, it was an invasion. They characterized it as a special military operation. So already we know a nuclear sub's appeared off the coast of Florida, a Russian sub, one off the coast of the UK, was reported over the weekend. It doesn't take much to get one to here. They roam the globe. They've got nuclear weapons on board. I'm not trying to scare people, but we've got to remember how we're perceived and which side we're perceived to be on, don't we?
Yeah, so, and you know, since when, I don't know, like a Bob Dylan's, I've learned to hate Russians all my whole life. It's just nonsense. And if you go back to your point on the war in the Ukraine, one of the biggest lies keeps repeated by people like the Foreign Minister Winston Peters and others, the unprovoked war. They have to put that in there.
Yeah.
It's just a lie. Even if you think we're opposed to Russia, you still shouldn't go around saying unprovoked war. And where would be the evidence that it was provoked? Well, you just have to read Angela Merkel. I think it was Hollande who said, oh, yes, of course we undermined the Minsk agreements, which were
to stall,
so that the Ukrainian army could be built up. Why was it being built up? So it could fight Russia as a proxy country. So it's not unprovoked. It's totally provoked. And all the doctrines were there saying, come on, bring it on. And let's bring them into NATO, and let's put rockets 5 or 7 minutes flight from Moscow, so they've got no response time. Come on, a right wing Russian government, a centre Russian government, a Bolshevik Russian government would look out the window, whatever they were, and say, "Hey, got to do something."
Is it time then, just to finish up your experience here and what you know of the role, is it time for New Zealand to make some sort of definitive statement that draws a line in the sand before it's too late?
Yes, and they'd be welcome arms to the global majority who are arguing for the same thing. Stop the war, stop feeding the war, stop ramping up the attack on China and demonizing China, and get down to serious politics. Yes, New Zealand could do it and should. I should do it, but I don't see.
Or be prepared, Matt, because if there is a big war, we're in the crap.
Oh yeah.
I mean, life as we know it changes. Everything stops. Global trade, pretty well. Everything. We're done, aren't we? We're going to have to look within ourselves, big time, like we've never done it before.
And if we launch those Poseidons with their anti-submarine hunting capacity, they'll probably last less time in the air than the New Zealand Air Force plane that takes Luxton to Japan.
Yeah.
It's just nonsense. And I mean,
they should be filling it up with spare parts for the trip as well. Probably burns too much fuel. Okay, anything more you want to add about any of those three things?
In all of this, I'm really asking that we put our thinking caps on, our debating caps on, including, you know, different opinions on this, and have genuine debate on these issues and not hurl abuse by if somebody comes up like I have done. I'll be, you know, for this one, this was public. Oh, there he is, a Putin puppet, etc. So all that does is put our head further and further into the sand and expose our ears to get an enormous...
A nuke, potentially. All right, Matt Robson, thanks for coming back on RCR. I don't think you're a Putin apologist, so don't have to worry about that. Great to hear your views. Let's see what happens.
Thank you.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.